Hello and welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch, Justin Kinney with you, and juicy news week for us with
spicy
a driver announcement plus other notes on drivers as the IndyCar silly season for 2024 is starting to wind down, at least for now. I don't think we'll have a whole lot of announcements between now and the rest of the year, but the big story, Romain Grosjean announced to the 77 car in 2024 for Juncos Hollinger Racing. Be his first time in a Chevy car, going back to a smaller team. That's the main story this week. But first, hello, Justin.
Greetings.
How are we doing?
Oh, we're not doing as well as Romain Grosjean, but not doing as bad as Callum Ilott. So, you know, we're in the meaty part of the curve.
That's true. We're very much in the middle. So let's get to it as we record on Thursday, November the 2nd in the evening here in the U.S. It is, well, the announcement I think we had seen on the table, off the table, back on the table, official now, Grosjean, Juncos 2024, pairing with Agustin Canapino, going to be fascinating to watch on so many different levels. I mean, obviously the team dynamic is the obvious thing, but also he goes from being a Honda guy since he came into IndyCar to a Chevy driver with a Chevy team. You have the McLaren partnership, the strategic partnership. Obviously, this is that car, and that's why he's correct in that car. Remember, this will be the car that has the extra McLaren sponsors
right
on it. And I think a key factor would be Mind Maze, which was on Juncos and was a previous Grosjean sponsor when he was with Coin. So keep that in mind. I would expect that to be on the car again for his Juncos ride and whatever else is left over from McLaren, obviously, as well. But that's another aspect of this to keep in mind. But it's a move that makes sense. He was the best driver available on the market. I don't think anyone's really questioning that. As far as ability to win a race and compete, qualify well, I mean, he's won 3 poles in his career, so it's not like he hasn't accomplished anything. Boom or bust, though, and this will be fascinating with him going back to a smaller team, maybe perhaps less pressure and more success, or it could be a continuation of what we saw last year where, to be fair, he did finish in the upper half of the grid in 13th in points, but and won a couple of pole positions. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean success. So we shall see.
Didn't meet his expectations, Andretti's expectations last year. And then, of course, with behind the scenes and sometimes not behind the scenes issues between the team, even Romain Grosjean said it to certain media members. Like it wasn't this vitriol between him and the entirety of the Andretti team. And he said he had several Andretti team members reach out to him and congratulate him on all this stuff with this opportunity. But I think what we've seen on social media is exactly why Romain Grosjean is a good driver to have in this series, because he is a love him, hate him type thing. If it was any Joe Schmo being named to the Juncos seat, it wouldn't make as big of an impact as this is making. And when you look at, okay, why? This is why. Because he's a polarizing dude. And all the people that are hating on him now, majority of them thought that he was probably going to win a race in 2023. Ended up not happening and went south. But he's only a year and a half, 2 years removed from being voted the IndyCar's most popular driver. So he's a dude that the series is better for to have around, not just because of his popularity and his ability to get interest from outside of the United States, but also the polarizing figure that he is, depending on what he says, how he drives, how he approaches other drive, just that whole thing. We talk about not wanting vanilla cookie cutter drivers. Romain Grosjean is not that, and we should be appreciative that he's coming back for another year.
Well, and after back-to-back 13th place points finishes with Andretti, before that, you got to look at what he did in 21. Remember, he didn't run the Texas doubleheader that year. He didn't run the Indy 500. He did run Gateway later on in the year, but he had his first pole. He finished 15th in points despite missing 3 races, including the 500, which was double points at the time. You got to keep that in mind. I mean, this is a guy that had a lot of success in that first year in IndyCar, a top 10 in his debut, Second in the Indy GP, a race we thought he was probably going to win. Fifth at Road America, seventh at Mid-Ohio, second in the second Indy GP race, and also a third, a podium at Laguna Seca toward the end of the season. So he had a lot of success his rookie year and was edged out by Scott McLaughlin only because McLaughlin won, but ran all the races. So he showed a lot of promise and warranted a bigger team and a bigger seat, so to speak, after that. It just did not work out at Andretti. And sometimes dynamics are everything, right? I mean, he came over with his engineer. We thought, oh, that'll really help. And it was a struggle the first year getting acclimated. We've seen other drivers struggle in year one with a bigger team to step up. And some turn around and some don't. I mean, Simon Pagenaud struggled in year one at Penske, for example. Then he won a championship the next year. Jack Harvey struggled in year one at Ray Hall and then lost his ride in year two. So it's a mixed bag for guys. And I think Grosjean brings a lot of talent. There's a lot of ability there. It's just finding a way to channel that and to be consistent. And whether it's been his F1 career or his short IndyCar career so far, consistency has been the question mark.
I don't want to discount the impact of the Juncos Ilott relationship, and Marshall Pruitt did write a very good article on kind of breaking it down on what happened with Juncos. I still feel like, at least in my opinion, it's not 100% Juncos, it's not 100% Ilott, but I think a lot of people are team Ilott on this. And even me looking in, I can tell you that Ilott has a bit of an arrogance to him. But when you bring in Romain Grosjean, now you have two dudes, veteran drivers that have raced for a long time in other series, and are coming together. And I think the big thing is Romain Grosjean understands the landscape of auto racing around the world and how crazy people can be sometimes. And that was, reading Marshall Pruitt's article, that was the biggest issue between Juncos and Ilott, was the handling of the so-called death threats and stuff from Argentina, from Argentinian fans taking, quote unquote, taking out Canapino, which he didn't begin with. Is I just think there's an apathy towards it because, oh, it's just Argentinians and stuff. It's kind of like soccer fans. It's kind of like anybody on social media. Oh, just whatever, it's talk. But I think that Romain Grosjean has been around global racing and Formula One to understand that too, that, hey, there's idiots on social media. I'm sure he's went through such things in his 9 years in Formula One. I just feel like maybe he's a better fit at Juncos to handle those types of things and understand where Juncos is coming from when they're like, hey, don't worry about what people are saying on social media, is that's the thing. And that's where Ilott couldn't handle it. He retaliated, you know, fired back. He did all that stuff. He engaged, don't engage. And I think Romain Grosjean fits Juncos, not just in that respect of knowing when to and when not to on social media, but also just kind of knowing the passion and obsession some fans have with auto racing to the point that they can act like idiots on social media.
Well, and how much of the relationship was pretty much already over when you go back to May, when
it wasn't
Ilott was demanding, you know, going to another chassis and the team was like, no. And then last minute, they decided to switch after they were really slow on the speed charts, you know, in danger of being bumped out. They switched. They were faster. And then they, again, found a way, moved chassis, and then ended up, you know, not only qualifying for the race, but finishing 12th. So, yeah, qualifying 28th, going to 12th in the race. I mean, that's an excellent drive. And it sounds great, but the problem is there was, you know, some arguing reportedly between Ricardo Juncos and Callum Ilott, which, again, people get heated in racing, but when you're arguing with the team owner, that is a very careful thing to do. And I guess when you look at it, that certainly wasn't helpful. And how much was this that Callum Ilott knew he just wanted to move on? It was just a matter of getting out of the contract. Again, he was under the contract through mid-December. And the fact that he was let out, you know, nearly, 2 months early?
Yeah.
That's a benefit that the team gave him. Now, does he find a laning spot? I don't know. Should he be on the grid? Yes. But let's also remember, he's a professional driver. He doesn't need fans defending him. He can defend himself. And also, we're getting awfully worked up for a guy who, again, has shown talent, is a young, talented driver in the series. But when you look at the results, I mean, he was 16th in point standings this year. He had two top fives, one top 10. That's it.
Not blowing people away with his results. And it's not like, oh, if he didn't have issues with this, that, or the other, he would have had a great performance. It just, he wasn't there. And there was one good aspect, one good part of Marshall Pruitt's article about talking about Ricardo Juncos, and basically said the team owner that's most like Roger Penske in the paddock in terms of his rigidity, is that a word? Rigidity? And a guy that doesn't compromise and it's my way, the highway, is Ricardo Juncos. And that just wasn't a good mesh with Kyle Amylott. Who knows if it's going to be a good mesh with Romain Grosjean. But it was an interesting point, and Marshall would know, of course, and ensconced in the paddock and stuff, is just made the comparison to Roger Penske. And Ricardo Juncos was very much this isn't an open door policy. It's my way, and this is the way we're going to do it. And it just didn't mesh well with Kyle Amylott. Will it work with Romain Grosjean? I'm fascinated to see if it does or doesn't. Regardless, it's going to be entertaining.
This sentence is the one I think I was referencing to that really we kind of latch onto. Amylott and Juncos engaged in a heated conversation where everything from parking the car to replacing Amylott to Amylott refusing to continue were said to be exchanged. That in the racer.com article, how the Amylott and Juncos partnership ended in divorce, story on page 2 of that story. So again, both sides are not blameless in this, but I think we both think Kyle Amylott should be back on the grid. It's just a matter of, is that seat available somewhere? You know, is it available at Foyt? Is it available at Coyne?
Like, those are the options. Very promising right now.
Or Andretti would I'm sure love to add him, but they'd have to find sponsorship.
Yeah, Kyle Amylott doesn't come with a lot of money, and I think that's what's going to hurt him at this point, because the seats that are open need a budget with drivers coming in, and it just doesn't seem like it. So could he be sports cars bound for 2024 and come back in 2025? Potentially. It's unfortunate for Kyle Amylott, but he's far from blameless in this situation. Let's not point at Kyle Amylott as the victim here. He had just as much, in my opinion, impact on what happened as Juncos did.
It takes two to tango in these things. I think while Amylott was caught up in some unfortunate things on social media, that's just the public area. Also, again, tweeting about it and making posts about it, like, that's not going to help your cause. Your best bet is to just ignore it and move forward.
Right.
And
yeah, it's just,
and acknowledging it is sometimes the worst thing you can do.
That's what they want. I mean, we all know trolls on social media stuff, and sometimes you want to engage and you have stuff typed up and you just can't push post. And if you do push post, you regret it. You got to let it go. And Kyle Amylott was incapable of doing that.
So that's the big news story of the week as far as where things stand. Now, going forward, where things stand, it is pretty interesting. This simple aspect, and this was pointed out in a motorsport.com article, but I did not know this. Kyle Amylott and Romain Grosjean have the same manager.
Yeah, how about that? That's interesting.
Just another layer to how all these things work, which, again, it makes sense. They both came from Europe. This is not like a impossible to believe thing, but that's how some of these things work out. So elsewhere in the silly season, as far as what we have left, we mentioned, so two Foyt seats, but we fully expect one of those to be Benjamin Peterson. I don't think there's really any doubt at this point. In fact, I think he even tweeted something the other day about Foyt and getting ready to get back on track and all of that. So I'd be very, very surprised. In fact, he said T minus roughly 1 month till we're back in the wagon for hybrid testing, and tagged the Foyt account and Chevy account. So I'd be very surprised if he does not return.
Yeah, I would imagine too. So I think that's going to be settled reasonably reasonably quick, and I think things are just kind of slotting into place. And once again, what we said a couple weeks ago, a couple of shows ago, we're filling seats in that aren't championship contenders. Most of them aren't even race contenders. So as much as we're talking about Grosjean, like what do you think is a realistic goal for Juncos? Not just for Grosjean next year, but that team, like finishing both guys or one guy maybe in the top 15.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you get both of them in the top 15? I think that's a little too much.
I think both in the top 20 is
right.
An achievable goal that would set the standard. I think you just, for Canapino, it's simple. You just want to see growth in year two. You want to see him challenge and you know, get some top 10 finishes.
Right.
Period.
But I think when you look at Juncos hiring Grosjean or bringing Grosjean in, whatever you feel about Romain Grosjean, I feel like amongst the dudes that are available, that are the quote unquote hot free agent names, he's the most capable.
Yes. I mean, most accomplished for
right.
sure.
Most accomplished. I mean, you could say, well, he just needs to clean up. I don't know if Romain Grosjean at this point in his career is capable of cleaning up how he drives. That's just him. But I still look at it as which hire is the best hire in terms of on track ability. Proven on track ability in terms of realistic free agents. I think you go Grosjean.
Yeah.
You could throw Sato, but I don't think so at this point of his career. I'd take Grosjean over Sato.
Sato outside of the 500 and Pagenaud are just two kind of like Sato will give you something as far as experience and same with Pagenaud. But again, Pagenaud, we don't know update on his health. If he returns, I mean, hopefully he's able to return at least running the Indy 500, and same with Sato. Now we'll have more on at least Sato a bit later on in some silly season updates. But I mean, at a full-time level, I would say he is your best option.
He's it, right? Yeah, I like the hire. I know some people, oh, Grosjean, he's terrible. He just got ousted from Andretti, blah, blah, blah. All you got to do is rub one person the wrong way, Michael Andretti, and you're going to put that in a world in danger of not coming back. So for me, I look at it as it's an opportunity for Romain Grosjean to exercise some demons of sorts. He needs to have realistic expectations of what this is going to be. But even if he can exceed those, even if he can be top 15 in points and get a podium, I mean, that's through the roof. For Juncos in 2023.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, to get any podium or top fives in that ride, even if it's just one, I think that's a step forward. And if he finishes 15th or better, the overall standings, that's better than the 16th they got in 2023.
Yes, it's improvement, which is what they're looking for.
So I think there's an opportunity for some growth. The key thing, as always with Grosjean, is you want to see consistency. And that is the question mark that you will look to see. So other notes on silly season, this coming from Nathan Brown of the Indy Star. He says that they're confident. He's confident that there's only one ride left to fill. And that's the 14 that Santino Ferrucci ran last year. Again, they continue to expect Benjamin Peterson to be back. There have been rumors about him going elsewhere, but Foyt told the Star at Laguna Seca they didn't foresee big changes in the driver lineup. Then acknowledged Peterson would be back. They continue to affirm that. We've seen rumors about Ferrucci and, you know, could he possibly be a part-time oval-only entry? It seems very up in the air. The team is split, is what Brown's reporting on Ferrucci's return, if it would be prudent to the team's development.
Mm.
So that is a question mark. But again, he had a lot of success at Indy. You would think that would mean something, but he doesn't bring a big budget.
No, he doesn't. But I think the positives outweigh the negatives.
The rumor out there, they'd split the seat like Carpenter's doing once again, where you have an oval driver and road and street course driver. We already know Juncos Dale Coyne Racing. Who knows? The latest update. So they did make a move and they signed veteran team manager Mitch Davis, who will return to the team for 2024. He was with the team when they captured their first victory in 2009 with Justin Wilson. He's been at many different teams, Chip Ganassi Racing, Gallus Racing, Newman Haas, Patrick Racing, among others. Spent the last 3 years at Wayne Taylor Racing and IMSA. So the word is, as far as team announcements, the press release from Coyne said the team will reveal more team expansion and driver news in the coming weeks.
We'll see. We'll see how many seats we fill between now and Christmas. I think the majority of them will be filled.
I think so too. I don't think we'll have all of them filled. I think we might be waiting on a couple. And what Brown had to say as far as Dale Coyne Racing and drivers, how Dale Coyne Racing factors into the free agent market is anyone's guess. I think that is
who knows? It's going to be, unfortunately, the two guys left that bring the most money.
Obviously, Devin DeFrancesco has been linked to that team heavily. Stingray Rob ran with the team last year, but I guess Rob's camp was unhappy with the performance of the 51 crew.
Stingray Rob was disappointed?
Yeah, and they're only interested in a return to Coyne's 18 car and as opposed to the 51 car.
I don't know. If I'm part of the 51 crew, I'm kind of disappointed in the performance of the driver.
Yeah, fair.
Who's Stingray Rob to accuse? I'm not saying he's not wrong. I'm sure there's fair blame all over, but we're not talking about Scott Dixon pointing the finger at his team as the problem.
He was 23rd in points.
Stingray Rob, quite frankly, doesn't deserve to be in the series. He proved nothing in the ladder to make me think he deserves to be in the series. So he should be counting his blessings that he's even getting a seat, a shot in IndyCar. Because he sure isn't deserving on the track. It's all about the money.
And speaking about the money, sixth place Indy Lights finisher Daniel Frost, who tested with Coyne last offseason, also could be in the fold. Again, budgets are everything.
I've said this before about Coyne. Like, what are we doing here? What are we really doing? Like, if you sat Dale Coyne down, like an intervention, be like, okay, Dale, like, what are we doing here?
He's making money.
Is he?
I think so. I mean, ideally, they go back to having one paid driver and then one driver who is paying.
Right. But right now, they're just taking checks.
Well, I mean, nothing's confirmed.
To what end? Well, I know, but that's what they did last year. It looks like what they're going to do this year. Like, is that where we're at with Coyne? Are you just going to put the two marginally decent drivers with the most money in your two seats? There's no terms of development. You don't have a veteran and a rookie. You're not doing any Sebastian Bourdais type thing. You tried to do that. Like, what's the mission here? Are you just going to go year to year and whoever brings you the most money, regardless if they're competent or not, get the seat? Or are you really going to make an investment in your team?
Well, weird with David Malukas because he clearly had talent, but he also brought money.
Yes, which is very rare. I think Malukas has proven himself to belong in a seat. I don't think he deserves a top end seat, in my opinion, but he's done enough. And that's the thing too, is like, let's say you get a Malukas or somebody better. They're just going to get poached anyway. If I'm Coyne, it's eventually you just wake up and you're kind of like just frustrated. Like, you know, you eventually reach that point where whatever situation's going on, you kind of all of a sudden just hit you in the head and like, what am I doing? And I just feel like that hasn't hit Dale Coyne yet. And his love for the series is that I get it. But in the end, like, Dale, what are you doing? You're not competing for wins. You're not competing for championships. You're just taking money to run cars. And if you have anybody good, they're just going to be taken anyway. And I'm not saying just drivers. You're talking engineers. You're talking anything. What are we doing here? And it just feels like we're heading that way again with, as every other team claims their people, whoever's left with the biggest checks are going to end up a Coyne.
We'll see what happens because I find those seats fascinating because I think we could go back to the, you know, one paid driver, one paying driver. I don't know if that's necessarily off the table. If they bring in Devlin DeFrancesco, they'd have enough money on the other end.
Yeah.
For
an actual hired driver.
Yes. At least
which
they
I would
should.
Like to see. Hire somebody that can come in, that can compete, that can mentor a young driver. But last year was just kind of like, you know, what are we doing here? Like, come on.
Well, you had a rookie and a second year guy. You just had a lack of experience. And I think they need one driver with more experience. And that's why I think 23 was so bad is they just, They didn't have any veteran driver, and usually they at least have one veteran driver. Yeah.
You don't want to be the team that adds nothing to the series other than two more cars. I really feel like that's where we are with Coyne and really a couple other teams, but they're striving, I think, to make change. Like, you look at Foyt, they're trying.
Well, the Penske Alliance certainly is going to.
They're absolutely trying.
I mean, they're set up
with McLaren.
Yeah.
Trying.
Yeah.
I think you look even at like Rahal after they hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying. Turn it around. Carpenter, I think
we shall see.
I think they're trying. I wouldn't say their decisions are the best, but I think you look at Carpenter, like, they want to be better.
But they've at least made some adjustments compared to what they did the previous 2 years. And we'll see if that works.
Yes. Coyne, if it came out tomorrow and Coyne was done, other than losing two cars and losing a team that's been in the series for a long time, I get it. What are you losing?
Well, you're losing your like development team. I mean, it is okay for a team to exist that works as a place for drivers to get their first rides and their first opportunities. Bigger teams exist because they have more resources, and that's also fine. Like, I guess I think there was a period where Coyne punched well above their weight for several years.
Right.
Part of that's because they had Sebastian Bourdais. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
And Justin Wilson as well for a time. So that was the exception and not the rule. And now, seemingly, again, it's unclear what their plans are, but seemingly they're going back to what they were before that time.
I just, man, it was so depressing watching Coyne last year, and I hope it's not that way in 2024. I hopefully they find some sort of capital to invest in some, at least one paid driver that you're bringing in to mentor somebody else or has proven success. If it's Pagenaud, I don't know. But you just like to see some effort.
I mean, they had Sato and David Malukas in 2022. So you had a rookie driver bringing a budget and then a veteran.
Yeah. 2022 was fine.
And then they had Grosjean running road and street courses and then Pietro Fittipaldi running ovals. And then the second seat was just, then you had Ed Jones. Then you even had that third entry with Cody Ware and Ryan Norman running a couple races. But again, you had a former F1 guy coming over. So like they mixed it up. Last year was just different. And then you had Alex Palou, Santino Ferrucci in 2020. I mean, two young guys. That worked out. I mean, again, developing talent.
Yeah.
In 2019, you had Ferrucci and you had Bourdais. So you had a rookie and then an experienced guy. So like they did this for several years. Last year was more of the anomaly in how Coyne was, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Which is
before getting Justin Wilson on board.
Yeah. Which is fine. Like if it's a blip in the radar, cool. It seems like we're heading that way again. Is what we saw in 2023 is going to be the same thing in 2024. I hope not. I hope we're not at a point where they're just going through the motions.
So that's a look at as far as full-time entries, Indy 500 field. We would expect Marco Andretti to be back with Andretti. We know Elio's in that third car at Meyer Shank, Kyle Larson, the fourth entry at Aaron McLaren. Christian Rasmussen will be in the third Ed Carpenter Racing entry. And then beyond that, I mean, obviously Rahal could run a fourth car in May. That would likely be Yuri Vips for a 500 entry. Obviously Andretti could run a fourth full-time car, and I think that would impact Rahal's fourth Indy 500 entry. And then you have Dryan Reinbold Racing. You know, they also run two cars traditionally. Foyt has held early discussions about an additional 500 car, according to Nathan Brown as well. We also know Don Cusick and Stefan Wilson will probably factor in. They could factor in again with Dryan Reinbold, for example. But don't expect to see Dryan Reinbold announce their drivers this end of year is basically the expectation.
Which is not unexpected. I would expect Reinbold and Coyne both to go into the new year with no announcements.
And then Able Motorsports, expect them to do the Indy 500 again in 2024 with RC Enerson. That is the latest there from motorsport.com. So we're looking at, again, 33 inches is not going to be an issue. Hasn't been an issue for a few years. I mean, obviously 2020, extreme circumstances, but 35, 36. I mean, obviously we're basically capped out at 36 as it is, but that's where things stand on that front.
We'll see what happens. Still some seats to fill, but the majority of the grid in terms of championship contenders were set.
Now
we got seat fillers, field fillers.
Some names I didn't mention. Simon Pagenaud, obviously unclear. And then Takuma Sato, Marshall Pruitt had this in the mailbag this week on racer.com. Said, last I heard was Honda engine supply, even for a favored son like Taku, could be an issue. At the moment, I'm not overly encouraged for the Indy 500 two-timer being in next year's field if we limit his options to Honda-powered entries. But what if he wasn't limited to using a Honda? Well, that would obviously change things, but I don't see that as a possibility.
Yeah, it's not too surprising. I think both engine manufacturers are pretty up against it.
And Pruitt expects Vips to become a full-time driver in 2025. You know, if 2024 is Graham Rahal's last full-time season, which, I mean, who knows? That could be the case. But we shall see what happens there. But that was another interesting note. And then we have a couple of rumors of guys on the F1 ladder potentially coming to IndyCar. So there were some rumors about Theo Pourchaire, who's been a top guy in F2 for a couple years. A lot of hype on this. I just don't think that's actually going to happen now because Alfa Romeo is targeting a super formula seat for him in 2024. WEC as the backup plan. So you can cross that name off the list. It was very short-lived.
Yeah.
About 2 days. And then also,
did you see the Yuri Vips discussion?
Well, what's the latest there?
So I can't remember where I read this, but it is true. So in talking about Yuri Vips, it sounded like that Rahal was going to keep him in the fold.
Yeah.
And could potentially be the replacement.
Yeah, I just talked about that.
After 2024 for Rahal?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was reading about my random split error driver of the week. And
who is a guy I've never heard of. I feel like you're making these names up.
Oh, no. He's got a Wikipedia page. He's got to be real. But I think Yuri Vips, has he had enough seat time, do you feel, if Rahal was done after this next year?
Well, here's the issue they have, and Pruitt brings up a good point on this. It's not just if Graham Rahal continues full time. It's also the fact that good luck keeping Christian Lundgaard after 2024.
Yeah.
I guess that's the real concern that I have for that team because he's positioned himself as the clear number one driver. And for Vips, I mean, enough IndyCar seat time? No. But if he gets a handful of races this year, I think you'd feel a lot better about it.
Well, I think it's a very, very, very important year for Rahal in the sense that it needs to show that it can be a consistent contender to keep Christian Lundgaard.
Yes.
I think that's
going to
be huge. If Rahal struggles again, even when they were at the end of the season, but it wasn't a full, there was very few races in which they were all firing on all cylinders. Now, road and street, particularly road courses, they were showing that potential, but ovals, we'll see where they are in May, of course, too. But Rahal needs to take another step from even where they were at the end of the season to have a realistic expectation to bring Christian Lundgaard back. So it's a good point. In 2025, are you looking to replace both Lundgaard and Rahal? That's tough.
Yeah. Well, and that's a real concern. The other name out there that we didn't mention for Dale Coyne Racing, because, well, he could be a possibility because there aren't many seats left, Enzo Fittipaldi, Pietro's younger brother, is 22 years old. There's
Enzo's
a possibility.
Only 22? Wow.
Yeah. There's a possibility. He has a test scheduled with Dale Coyne Racing. They'll share Sebring early this month. I would guess sometime early next week as far as some testing. Unclear if it's a part of a bigger plan for Enzo to switch to IndyCar, but they would like to race together. He's raced in F4, F3, and F2 now. The last few years, he's been a member of the Red Bull Junior team since 2017. So he's seventh in the F2 standings, 4 podiums and a win as of a few days ago. So Jacob Abel also set to take part in the same 2-day test with Dale Coyne Racing, which is also fascinating.
Yeah, which I know Enzo brings money. I don't know Jacob Abel. I'm sure he brings money with his family, of course. Able Motorsports. So two guys to keep an eye on for coin.
A lot of names out there on the radar. We'll see who actually gets
only
the
a few seats for those many names.
I mean, I go back, I think of like drivers mentioned back in the day, and it felt like it was all but a done deal that KV Racing 2008, James Rossiter would be if
oh
you recall
gosh.
The name.
Yes, I
it
do.
It was all but a done deal that he was going to be with KV Racing Technology in, I want to say, 2008. Then he ended up racing LMP2. So, again, names trickle out of the right. Remember, Logan Sargent had a seat fitting with Foyt.
Yep.
And then was probably going to be in IndyCar a few years ago. And then, boom, Williams picked him up for the Driver Academy. Now he's in F1. And
now
here
he's scoring
are.
Points for Williams.
Yeah, getting a point. So you just never know how these things will work out in the silly season.
You never know. And you think we know what's going on in Formula One. Reading things and hearing it, Red Bull is planning some big changes, not with its F1 lineup, but within its Driver Academy, where Enzo Fittipaldi resides. So could some drivers that feel like they're confident in where they're at in Formula 2 or F3 all of a sudden find themselves without financing and having to go elsewhere? The wheels are always in motion in motorsports.
And Pietro Fittipaldi still aiming to be a reserve driver for Haas in F1 next year. Again, he'd at least be available the final 7 races of the F1 calendar, a few other spare weekends. So again, you could split that reserve driver role with Ferrari junior Oliver Bierman on hand as well with the team. So again, that's a possibility for him to continue that too.
We'll see what happens.
All right. If you agree, disagree, have some comments for us, let us know. You can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, sign up for the email list so you never miss an episode. It is free to subscribe. Also, you can check out our store. We have t-shirts and stickers for sale. You can find us on social media, IndyCar Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter/X, on Facebook. Just search for New Track Record. Our email address, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. And you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. Thanks to Xavier, Rob, and several others for their monthly support. Again, starting at just $1 a month. And as always, you can download the podcast and listen for free on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, wherever you listen to podcasts, all for free. All right, mailbag time. And we had a ton, and we're not going to go through every response on one of the things that you posted. Is a great topic, but it was, if IndyCar had a season like F1 with Max Verstappen, which driver, past or present, would you enjoy watching win every race? Again,
I think there were a variety of different ways you could go, because you're like, well, everybody will pick their favorite driver, and some people did,
or they just picked the dominant drivers, and
or the dominant
who is more likely.
But I feel like what I kind of looked at it as, okay, which driver would bring the most attention or the most impact on the series? And I thought a woman driver.
Yeah.
What if any woman driver, let's say Chadwick came up in IndyCar and somehow just went all right. Like, could you imagine the impact on IndyCar if Jamie Chadwick came in and was Max Verstappen in IndyCar? So that was kind of my thing. My biggest, who I would like to see that happen, would be somebody that would transcend the series, that would put all eyes on it. And I felt like if a woman driver did it, it would be the biggest impact.
So there are a ton of votes, and some, again, like you said, some people picking their favorite driver. There was one person pointing out, well, this nearly happened, Al Unser in 1970. And that season in his domination, that from 500 Indy 1911, a bunch of people said Rick Mears. That was a very popular pick, or a Penske driver. That was also very common. Someone said, Jeremy from HBG said, Pelot is the most likely to actually do it, but would sign contracts with 6 different teams in 3 different series with 4 lawsuits after, which is really funny. Votes for Jacques Villeneuve, Colton Herta, Ferrucci, Christian Lundgaard, Scott Dixon, Frank Keady, Arcole, Thomas Schechter for sure, and the drama would be great. A lot of other people said Michael Andretti. Someone said, oh, please no. Okay, if it must, let it be Canapino from an Argentinian fan. Other votes for PT, Carlos Huertas, or EJ Viso, that from Jeff Zernesky. RamTX22 said Montoya or Pato. Luke BS37 went with Herta. Marty Williams 63 posted a gif of the red gloves, obviously, for Greg Moore.
Mm-hmm.
The anniversary of his passing came earlier this week. Some votes for Scott McLaughlin, Little Al, AJ Foyt Jr. I think they mean AJ Foyt Jr.? Yes. Okay, so Foyt.
Yes.
I'm mixing
the OG.
Up the OG. So there are just a lot of really good stuff on this. And we obviously don't have the time to read through every single response.
But I thought it was an interesting debate question. Because, or even a question to put out there, because once again, Max starts sixth at COTA, and you have some.
You thought there was a chance.
There wasn't. At least Lewis was in the picture, but it was by no means riveting. And then in Mexico last week, did the same. I think he started third, I think, with Ferrari locking out the front row, but he won. So it just kind of came up to my mind, like, who would you want to see? I mean, asking you the question, I said like a woman or a Mexican driver that would really just galvanize an entire fan base to be locked into IndyCar would be pretty cool. Would you go with your favorite driver? Would you go with somebody? What would you most like to see?
Your vote of Jamie Chadwick is fascinating. I mean, obviously not presently in IndyCar. So
correct.
But I mean, presently in IndyCar, a Pato O'Ward or a Colton Herta. I like both drivers.
Yeah.
But I think also would kind of transcend just because of their popularity with fans across generations, but also they're part of that younger generation of drivers, right? And mm-hmm. have very rabid fan bases and have ties to F1. So they're well known beyond just America.
Right.
For that aspect. They're known globally. So I think those would be the drivers I would think of on this list. There's so many good responses here. Like some of the other ones that I saw after the fact, someone jokingly said Milka Duno, which
is great.
It
is a woman driver.
K-San 5001. I thought that was hilarious. That was a good one. I mean, votes for Mario Andretti, obviously. So really good question and a lot of good responses.
Yeah, we appreciate everybody for chiming in on that one. Make no mistake, we don't want to see that in IndyCar, but if it was a thing, who would you most go for?
Yes.
Appreciate everybody chiming in.
Other notes from the mailbag. Some responses from last week's episode. So, Arcole, why won't IndyCar release the full 1996 Las Vegas 500K? What are they hiding? We demand answers.
I had a couple people message us and were fascinated by that talk.
Yeah.
And I've kind of talked about it off air about, you know, maybe at some point we start just pulling random races out to break down, because that's more about the 96 race there that I ever knew mm-hmm. or even thought I would want to know. But it was pretty cool going back. So maybe that's a feature off seasons as we go forward. You're confident we'll never run out of random split errors. I keep telling you there is an end point to this thing.
In like several years.
I don't know. I don't know if we can go, if there's 100 more random split error driver of the week to cover two more years. So if we ever run out, maybe that's something we'll do. But it was a fascinating dive into that race for sure.
Transocean Trojan also had some comments. Enjoyed your deep dive on that Vegas race. I was there. I was a little kid, but my dad was pumped for that race. I don't remember much, only that it went into the night and we were cheering for Richie Hearn. His family lived down the street from us. So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty sweet. So I wanted to ask Transocean Trojan, do you have video evidence of the final, 65 laps? Because there is none to exist.
So I need to, again,
you say you were there.
I forgot to ask one of our coworkers down the hall who, you know, gets video of old races and compiles them from like VHS tapes and whatnot.
Yeah.
So if he knows anything about that, because I'm sure he would have a good story. So Mac, if you're listening, which I know eventually you probably will be, let me know. elsewhere on the mailbag for this week, getting a lot of replies on Callum Ilott and just where will he end up in 2020? Again, I'd be surprised if he has a full-time ride.
This late in the game, I would.
Yeah. And again, these are carryovers from last week with a few newer responses. Racerboy 1969 said he's too good to be here. Hopefully he can stay in IndyCar because he is talented. Jay Blasteri said coin or a sports car ride. So it's just, again, I feel like coin is his one shot that's left. And Art Cole said still waiting for Finn Lazier on the Fittipaldi article.
He's coming.
We'll see. I don't know.
Nah, he's probably like 25 now, isn't he?
It probably. Yeah.
It's been
5, 6, 7 years since that.
Yeah.
DePazo Rodrigo saying, I mean, we got counterpoints. Such a breath of fresh air to hear someone talk about the Ilott and Juncos situation without falling for the Ricardo Juncos is pretty much a kidnapper and Callum a poor victim of his wrath. Unsustained and biased version some others chose to irresponsibly present to their audiences. And then on the flip side, you have the opposite take from Daniel SCM 2004. You guys think Callum Ilott acted like he was entitled is stretching things to ends of credibility. You guys need to listen to Pruitt's latest pod's breakdown of what happened to Ilott and JHR. So calling Callum Ilott entitled, maybe find out what likely happened. But Kenny is going to have a stupid take regardless.
Well, that's a guarantee. Duh.
Which, I mean, he broke that down in his article on racer.com.
Like, I get it.
Both sides were not blameless.
Yeah, though. But that's the thing is I think people kept looking at Callum Ilott as, oh, poor guy. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think he shared some of the blame.
I mean, we saw the same thing happen with Connor Daly, right? I mean, he earned some of the blame and we found an article of him talking about the sponsor and maybe going to a different team after the fact that fell completely under the radar. So
right.
These things happen. All right. Obviously tons of comments on the Grosjean news as well. So we want to dive into those. Bingles DFW just posted a gif. This isn't going to end well. Jeremy from HBG says team that doesn't like negative driver feedback hires driver who wasn't renewed at previous team because he was astoundingly negative towards his team. What could possibly go wrong? And then bonus points.
Yeah.
He's a driver who's known for driving teammates extra hard and even crashing them going to a team whose other driver's fans give death threats to people who cut their driver off in the buffet line. This should go well.
But it's going to be entertaining, folks.
Yes.
When we talk about it with IndyCar, I mean, can't they just have some drama? Well, this is it. You are setting yourself up for a season worth of drama, and we're all here for it.
And the best part is, this is a team that's not, you know, top of the grid, so the midfield battle will be that much more entertaining.
Yeah, it's like trying to make the midfield exciting in Formula One, but this may actually be exciting.
Yeah, don't need that in any car. This from I Am Analog. I know which car audio I will be most listened to. Yeah. Hunter's Way 67, St. Pete can't get here soon enough. And Poet Shevchenko, I'm happy to see he still has a ride and is humble enough to go to Juncos instead of bowing out entirely. Who knows? It may turn out better than we all expect. Possibility.
Yeah. I would think that all of the concerns that everybody has with this relationship have been talked about between Ricardo Juncos and Romain Grosjean. They're not ignoring these issues. That said, doesn't mean that they won't come up during the season, but I'm sure they've been discussed and talked about.
This from 5 Mirka. I'm only concerned about his consistency. He is fast, but well, accident prone, a tie over from F1. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
But it is a fascinating storyline, and to have him off a big team doesn't mean that it's not going to draw attention, because he'll draw attention no matter what team he's driving for. It's just the reality.
Absolutely.
All right. That wraps up the mailbag news and notes time. A few items to get to. The full repay project has been completed at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. So expect track records to fall for IndyCar when they come in July of 2024. So that was completed on October 27th. So just about a week ago. So that will be getting a lot of repaves now with Mid-Ohio. That's great. You did the repave. Next is upgrading the facilities.
Yeah. Need that a little bit. Mid-Ohio.
A fun place to go visit, but yes, it does need to be modernized a bit. New name for the Indy GP. It'll be the Suncio Grand Prix. That used to be the sponsor at Road America. Obviously been a sponsor for Scott McLaughlin.
Okay. I knew it was a race sponsor. Somewhere.
So Sunseo Grand Prix, May 10th and 11th at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Congrats to James Hinchcliffe. He's part of the class of 2023 for the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame. So congrats to Hinch. Also the Detroit Grand Prix in 2023, all-time high in total spinning and economic impact for the Metro Detroit area, according to a study that they released. So obviously positive news. Estimated crowd of 150,000 people over the three-day weekend. Independent study by St. Louis-based Sports Impacts. Record $104.4 million in total spinning activity by both local and visiting fans and businesses for the greater Detroit region. So there's some of the numbers.
Very nice.
Obviously not the $1 billion mark for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but nothing is going to
something.
Come close to that. Robert Wickens was on Speed Freaks the other day and said, talking about a hand control system, said the hand control system would have to be state of the art. The reality is it would take $500,000 to get an IndyCar up and running with hand controls on his dreams of running the Indy 500. So that puts it in perspective, the challenge.
All right. Who's got that money to step up, finance that?
Kiffin Simpson ran on the IMS road course late last month. Again, probably not with a hybrid, but getting some testing time with Chip Ganassi Racing. So it's always good when you can get testing at IMS in October.
Yeah, because you never know.
Never going to be a negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Michael Andretti, this quote is great. F1 teams think, quote, we are a bunch of hillbillies, end quote.
I would think... either hillbillies or cowboys. Oh, them American cowboys coming over here.
I mean, it's funny because they're all the drivers and teams are embracing cowboy hats for the Dakota race every
year. Everybody's got cowboy. Oh, look at us. Americans. Ho, 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 ho.
In the South.
Yeah, yee-haw. Here we are. And then now they're above it when they leave COTA.
One other note to get to. Really good news from George Phillips, who runs Oil Pressure Blog. But saying in April, Mrs. Oil Pressure was moved from 3-month cancer scans to 6-month scans. She was scanned on Tuesday, so this is a week ago. Happy to announce that 3.5 years after her initial pancreatic cancer diagnosis, horrendous chemo, surgery, and radiation, her scans are clear, and she is still cancer-free.
Phenomenal news. Great job, Mr. and Mrs. Oil Pressure Blog.
Yes, George Phillips. So very positive tweets of the week. We have one, and it's from the Tim Durham. Saw a guy in a Haas F1 shirt at my daughter's class Halloween party. It was a costume party, so I said, being a Haas fan is pretty scary. Turns out, he wasn't in a costume. He just worked for Haas.
That's phenomenal. That is great.
That is
love it.
Pretty tough. All right, now it's time for a random split air driver of the week.
I want to know how the guy took it.
Probably not well. Just a guess.
Okay, we're going back to CART, the fertile ground that is CART, and we're going with a Swiss-born driver, and I'm going to try to say his name. Joel Camathias is a Swiss-born race car driver, and he raced for, speaking of, Dale Coyne Racing for 7 rounds. Of the 2003 season. Looking at the season, it was the first 7 races of the year. His top finish was at St. Pete to start the season, a 9th. He never finished above 13th the rest of the way. He was 13th at Brands Hatch, which I forgot
they
were Brands Hatch. No, right. No. I thought that was your family's track.
No, if only.
No. His last race of the season was at Monterey. The Long Beach or the Grand Prix of Monterey at Laguna Seca in 2003. So he was 7 races elsewhere is what he did. A couple of years of 24 hour Le Mans and a year of Formula 3000. He had previously driven sports cars part-time, returned to Europe to drive in Le Mans in 2004, won the GT2 class of the 2006 Le Mans series season, driving a Porsche 911. And he is the great, and this of course is your relation to knowing why I knew you said, man, that name sounds familiar. He's the great nephew of the late Florian Camathias, a solo motorcycle and sidecar racer?
No.
I know you are big. No.
Another random split air driver that when I saw the name before we started recording, I'm like, who is this guy? Like, you're just making names
up.
Who
is this man?
What's fascinating is, so he competed in the final kart oval race, which was the Milwaukee Mile in 2003, because Champ Car, as it was then known, after 2003, I believe they didn't run another oval, right?
Was the last one Milwaukee that year?
Oh wait, no, sorry, they ran Milwaukee in 2004.
Okay,
so my apologies, but the King Taco 500 was the one canceled by wildfires at Fontana in 2003. So there were no, he ran the only oval that season, which was again at Milwaukee, and also just a wild list of tracks.
Oh no, Brands Hatch. You're talking
Monterey, Mexico, along with Monterey, California.
Yep, the Monterey double raced at Euro Speedway.
Yeah, Lausitzring, right?
Yep, Lausitzring. That was the return of Alex Zanardi. The Milwaukee race was the first night race in kart history.
The temporary lights for that event.
And then he wrapped it up again with Monterey, and then he was done.
And the first St. Pete race as well was his debut. So
that's correct.
A fascinating schedule for him that year. Did get 6 points.
His sponsor for that season was the city he was born in, Lugano. That was his sponsor for his seven races.
One of his teammates, Jeff Boss, was sponsored by Lacoste.
Yes.
some of these names on Dale Coyne Racing, like Jeff Boss, Roberto Gonzalez.
Oh, they're just a veritable
Alex Sparifico,
veritable who's who of random split air drivers. Like seven drivers,
chock full
that season, raced at least one race for Coyne. Seven drivers,
absolutely wild.
But yes, Joel. I'm gonna say Joel. Probably wrong. Camathias from Lugano, Switzerland. This week's random split air driver of the week.
All right, that wraps up this week's episode. Next week we'll be back with more IndyCar news. Hopefully get some more silly season seats confirmed. For Justin Kinney, I am Caleb Hatch. This has been New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.